Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast, the Commerce Clause and the 21st Amendment edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On June 26, 2019, the Supreme Court decided Tennessee Wine and Spirit Retailers Association v. Thomas, a case considering whether Tennessee's two-year durational residency requirement for obtaining a retail liquor license is constitutional. In 2016, companies Total Wine and Afflor Investments Incorporated applied for licenses to own and operate liquor stores in Tennessee. Although state law imposed a two-year durational residency requirement that the entities did not meet, the Tennessee Alcoholic Beverage Commission had obtained an opinion from the state attorney general that the requirement operated as a discriminatory trade restraint in violation of the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause. The Tennessee Alcoholic Beverage Commission therefore recommended approval of the licenses, but Trade Association Tennessee Wine and Spirits Retailers Association, composed of in-state liquor retailers, threatened to sue if the licenses were granted. The Tennessee Alcoholic Beverage Commission therefore sought declaratory relief on the validity of the durational residency requirement, and the case was removed to federal district court. The district court held the requirement unconstitutional. The state declined to appeal, and the licenses were issued. The association, however, pursued its objections before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, which ultimately affirmed the district court, though a dissenting judge argued that the Constitution's 21st Amendment granted states broad authority to regulate the in-state distribution of alcohol and would have upheld the residency requirement. The Supreme Court subsequently granted cert to reconcile its 21st Amendment and Dormant Commerce Clause precedents. By a vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Sixth Circuit. Justice Alito delivered the opinion of the court, holding that Tennessee's two-year durational residency requirement applicable to retail liquor store license applicants violates the Commerce Clause and is not saved by the 21st Amendment. Justice Alito's majority opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Kavanaugh. Justice Gorsuch dissented and was joined by Justice Thomas. And now, to discuss the case, we have Michael Bindis, senior attorney at the Institute for Justice.
Happy to be here today to talk about Tennessee Wine and Spirit Retailers Association versus Thomas. The immediate dispute concerned the constitutionality of Tennessee's durational residency requirements for brick-and-mortar retail liquor stores. In Tennessee, in order to secure a license to open a store, an individual had to have resided in the state for at least 2 years immediately preceding the application. At that point, if they met all the other criteria for a license, they could secure one. The license was good for 1 year, but then in order to renew the license, you had to have resided in the state for 10 consecutive years. So in effect, an individual who wants to open or wanted to open a retail liquor shop could do so after living in the state for 2 years, could operate the store for 1 year, and then would have to sit around another 7 before they could renew. Bizarre to say the least. As for corporate applicants, those same 2 and 10 year durational residency requirements applied, but they applied to every officer, director, and stockholder of the corporate applicant. So if a publicly traded company, for example, wanted to open a retail liquor store in Tennessee, every single one of its stockholders had to meet those 2 year and 10 year durational residency requirements. The constitutionality of that regulation or those regulations was kind of the immediate dispute in this case. But really the bigger picture issue was, how do you reconcile the Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine with Section 2 of the 21st Amendment? The Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine, as I suspect a lot of the listeners know, generally speaking, prohibits states from erecting discriminatory barriers that prohibit out-of-state economic interests in favor of in-state economic interests. Certainly, the durational residency requirements, which keep out-of-state residents or newly arrived in-state residents from purchasing and operating a retail liquor store, raise some significant Dormant Commerce Clause concerns. But then you have to consider Section 2 of the 21st Amendment. The 21st Amendment, of course, repealed prohibition, and Section 2 of the 21st Amendment provided that the transportation or importation into any state in violation of the laws of that state is prohibited. So essentially, Section 2 gave the states broad authority to regulate alcohol and prohibited the transportation or importation of alcohol into any state if it was in violation of the laws of that state. So you have this seemingly broad regulatory grant of authority to the states that was part of the repeal of prohibition. You have to ask, how does that interact with the limits that the Dormant Commerce Clause places on the states in their ability to regulate in a way that harms or burdens out-of-state economic interest? So that's really the kind of bigger picture issue here, is how do you reconcile those two things? With that said, I'll talk a little bit about the facts that gave rise to the case. For quite a few years, the residency requirements were really a non-issue, and that was because the state was not enforcing them. The Attorney General of Tennessee had issued two opinions in 2012 and 2014, and he came to the conclusion that these durational residency requirements violated the Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine. In fact, he went so far as to call them trade restraints and barriers that impermissibly discriminate against interstate commerce. So the state was not enforcing them. That started to change in 2016. Around the same time, late spring or early summer of 2016, there were two new applications for a retail liquor store submitted. One was by the national alcohol chain retailer Total Wine. The other was by Doug and Mary Ketchum, a husband and wife who were seeking to purchase a small mom-and-pop liquor store in Memphis. The applications of Doug and Mary and Total Wine drew the ire of the Tennessee Wine and Spirit Retailers Association. The association is a trade or lobbying group for in-state retailers, and the association threatened to sue the state, the Alcoholic Beverage Commission, if it issued the licenses to Doug and Mary and to Total Wine. It said that you have to enforce the durational residency requirements. These folks don't meet them, and we're going to sue you if you issue licenses to them. The state deferred acting on the license applications for several months. Meanwhile, Doug and Mary were in Memphis, but unable to do what they had gone there to do. And then finally, several months later, the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Commission kind of threw up his hands and went to state court and filed a declaratory judgment action asking the state court to rule on the constitutionality of the durational residency requirements. As part of that action, he named as defendants Doug and Mary, Total Wine, and the Retailers Association. The Retailers Association removed the case to federal court, and the federal court then realigned the parties. Given the Attorney General's opinion that the laws were unconstitutional, the district court aligned the state as a plaintiff alongside Total Wine and the Ketchums and left the Retailers Association as a defendant to defend the state's residency requirements. So kind of a bizarre kind of procedural quirk here. But at that point, the state's position began to evolve. Total Wine moved for summary judgment, and the state actually opposed the motion and defended the residency requirements alongside the association. Total Wine's summary judgment motion presented two arguments. One was that the durational residency requirement violated the Dormant Commerce Clause. The other was that it violated the Privileges and Immunities Clause of Article 4, Section 2. The district court did not reach the latter provision, but it did reach the Commerce Clause issue. And I'll talk a little bit about what the district court did. It noted at the outset that the Dormant Commerce Clause arises from a concern about economic protectionism, that is, state regulations that attempt to benefit in-state economic interests at the expense of out-of-state competitors. And it noted that in the traditional Dormant Commerce Clause analysis, if a law discriminates against commerce on its face, the law is subject to heightened scrutiny, and it can only prevail or be sustained if the law serves legitimate local purposes that cannot be adequately served by some reasonable non-discriminatory alternative. The court had no problem concluding that Tennessee's durational residency requirements were facially discriminatory, and that in the ordinary course of things, they would be virtually per se invalid under that traditional Dormant Commerce Clause test that I just mentioned. But the association and the state argued that Section 2 of the 21st Amendment saved those discriminatory provisions. They acknowledged that if traditional Dormant Commerce Clause analysis applied, the regulations would likely be unconstitutional, but they argued that the additional powers that the states received by virtue of Section 2 somehow saved the durational residency requirements. They noted in making that argument that the most recent case concerning these issues that the Supreme Court had decided, which was Granholm versus Heald, a 2005 case, had held that the 21st Amendment grants the states, and I'm quoting here, virtually complete control over whether to permit importation or sale of liquor and how to structure the liquor distribution system. They also noted that Granholm had said that the three-tier system, that is the system that many states use to regulate alcohol that divides the system up into producers, distributors, and retailers, Granholm had said that that system is unquestionably legitimate. And so the association and the state argued that the durational residency requirements were just part and parcel of Tennessee's structuring of the three-tier system, and that they were therefore constitutional, even if they would violate the Commerce Clause had they concerned something other than alcohol. Now, the problem is, Granholm had also held that state regulation of alcohol is limited by the non-discrimination principle of the Commerce Clause. And the laws at issue there in Granholm were actually invalidated under the Commerce Clause. The laws at issue in that case authorized in-state but not out-of-state wineries to ship directly to consumers in Michigan and New York. And the Supreme Court held that that discrimination against out-of-state wineries violated the Commerce Clause, notwithstanding Section 2 of the 21st Amendment. In the Tennessee case, the association and the state argued that Granholm's holding in that regard, its invalidation of those laws under the Commerce Clause, was limited to the producer or product tier of the three-tier system. They argued that so long as a state treated out-of-state alcohol the same as in-state alcohol, it was free to regulate how it saw fit. In effect, the non-discrimination principle applied to the producer tier, but not to the wholesaler or retail tier of the three-tier system. The district court rejected that understanding of Granholm. It noted that Granholm only talked about the producer tier specifically because the laws at issue in that case happened to concern the producer tier. And the district court reasoned that the durational residency requirements were not an inherent aspect of the three-tier system, and therefore that the 21st Amendment did not save the durational residency requirements from traditional commerce laws analysis. And the court had, again, no problem concluding that the laws were facially discriminatory, and it concluded that there were plenty of non-discriminatory, reasonable means of achieving the state's asserted public health and safety interests. So the district court invalidated the durational residency requirements. But the ordeal didn't end there. The association appealed to the Sixth Circuit, and the state largely ceded defense of the durational residency requirements to the association. The state filed a brief in the Sixth Circuit, but it waived oral argument and allowed the association to advocate the state's position. The Sixth Circuit affirmed. That brings us to the Supreme Court, and it is, I think, very telling that, again, it was the association, not the state of Tennessee, that petitioned for cert in the Supreme Court. And it's also telling that the state did not even file a merits brief or argue with the Supreme Court. It allowed, again, this trade association for in-state retailers to essentially stand in the state's shoes before the court. It was a 7-2 opinion. The majority was authored by Justice Alito. Justice Alito began with an overview of the Commerce Clause, a historic overview of the Commerce Clause, emphasizing the fact that this was the primary safeguard against economic protectionism in the original Constitution. He then turned to Section 2 of the 21st Amendment, and he acknowledged that the text of Section 2 is potentially very broad insofar as it confers authority on the states to regulate liquor differently than other products. But he also came to the conclusion that Section 2 couldn't just supersede every provision of the Constitution that came before it. His words were that Section 2 has to be viewed as one part of a unified constitutional scheme, that you have to reconcile Section 2 with the Commerce Clause, or at least the dormant Commerce Clause doctrine, that Section 2 isn't just a trump to everything else that came before it. And so Justice Alito, in order to reconcile these two provisions, undertook a historical overview of alcohol regulation and jurisprudence both before Prohibition and in the wake of the repeal of Prohibition to see how the court had traditionally approached these issues. And he came to the conclusion that the thrust of Section 2 of the 21st Amendment was to constitutionalize the kind of basic understanding of state power to regulate alcohol as it was understood prior to Prohibition. And his understanding of what states' power to regulate alcohol was that, you know, certainly states could regulate the product for purposes of protecting the public health and safety, but in doing so, they could not discriminate against the citizens or the products of other states. He acknowledged that some of the early post-prohibition cases that the Supreme Court resolved suggested that Section 2 of the 21st Amendment did, in fact, override earlier provisions of the Constitution. But he also noted that more recent opinions, in particular Granholm, had come to the conclusion that Section 2 did not entirely supersede the rest of the Constitution or supersede Congress's power to regulate commerce. The aim of Section 2, he stressed, is not to give the states a free hand to restrict importation of alcohol for purely protectionist purposes. He went on to stress that protectionism is not a legitimate interest for regulating alcohol under Section 2, and that Section 2 is not a license to violate the non-discrimination principle that had prevailed prior to Prohibition. The court rejected the association's attempt to limit Granholm to the producer and product tier of the three-tier system. Justice Alito noted, like the lower courts, that that was just a consequence, that kind of language about producers and products specifically in Granholm was just a consequence of the fact that Granholm involved that tier of the system. And he came to the conclusion that the Commerce Clause, in fact, applies, or the Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine applies this non-discrimination principle throughout the regulatory regime of alcohol, all three tiers. As for Granholm's language that the three-tier system was unquestionably legitimate, Justice Alito stressed that that doesn't mean every discriminatory feature of a three-tier system that a state might adopt is necessarily legitimate, and that Tennessee's durational residency requirements were not an essential feature of a three-tier system. He noted that there were plenty of three-tier systems in other states that did not have durational residency requirements, and in fact that there are some that don't even have simple residency requirements. And he said that each variation of a state's regulatory structure of alcohol must be judged based on its own features, in his words. So that means, at that point, the non-discrimination principle does apply to regulations that impact the retail tier of alcohol regulation. But Justice Alito also recognized that Section 2 of the 21st Amendment has to mean something. He said Section 2 requires the court to engage in his words, a different analysis than the traditional Dormant Commerce Clause analysis, because Section 2 does give the state some regulatory authority that they wouldn't otherwise enjoy. And so he laid out a framework for reconciling these two doctrines. He said that the court has to ask if the challenge regulation can be justified on some public health or safety basis or some other legitimate non-protectionist ground, and that if the predominant effect of the law is economic protectionism rather than protection of the public health and safety, it is not shielded by Section 2 and the traditional Dormant Commerce Clause analysis applies. The court put the burden on the government, on the state, to show that the predominant effect of the durational residency requirements is protection of the public health and safety rather than economic protectionism. And in order to determine the predominant effect of the regulations, he looked at two things: evidence of how well the residency requirements actually promote the state's asserted public health and safety interests, and evidence of whether non-discriminatory alternatives would be insufficient to achieve those interests. The burden is squarely on the state to demonstrate that the predominant interests are not protectionism. And Justice Alito stressed that in undertaking that analysis, the state has to actually offer concrete evidence of the predominant effect being to serve the public health and safety. He specifically said that mere speculation or unsupported assertions would not be sufficient to carry the state's burden. He applied this framework to the durational residency requirements, and he concluded, like the lower courts, that their predominant effect was not to protect the public health and safety, but rather, in his words, the predominant effect was to protect the association's members from out-of-state competition. And in that light, he, along with six other justices, voted to invalidate the durational residency requirements. Justice Gorsuch, as I mentioned, authored a dissent. He acknowledged that Section 2 did not insulate alcohol regulations from every conceivable constitutional claim. He mentioned specifically the First Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause, that Section 2 would not insulate an alcohol regulation from a claim brought under one of those provisions. But he went on to say that the Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine is different. In his words, it's a peculiar one. He said that unlike most constitutional rights, the Dormant Commerce Clause doctrine cannot be found in the text of any constitutional provision, but is at best an implication from one. And so he viewed the 21st Amendment and its relation to the Commerce Clause a bit differently than he would in relation to some other provision of the Constitution, such as the First Amendment or the Equal Protection Clause. What the Commerce Clause actually does, he stressed, is gives Congress the power to regulate interstate commerce. I think he was suggesting that dormant or negative aspect of the Commerce Clause perhaps is not legitimate. Rather, the Commerce Clause should be viewed solely as a conferral on Congress of the power to regulate interstate commerce. And he noted that Congress had actually done so in respect to alcohol in a pre-prohibition statute called the Webb-Kenyon Act, a law that's still on the books, in fact. That law basically says that the shipment or transportation of alcohol into another state in violation of any law of that state is prohibited. And Justice Gorsuch thought that the purpose of Section 2 was to essentially constitutionalize that idea, that exception to dormant Commerce Clause analysis, that Section 2, in effect, allowed states to enact laws that could keep out-of-state liquor out or that could discriminate against out-of-state interests in the sale of liquor, and that Dormant Commerce Clause didn't have anything really to say in that respect. He went on to note that there have been residency requirements on alcohol for at least 150 years in this country, and he stressed that Tennessee's had existed since 1939. He also noted that some of the Supreme Court's early post-prohibition decisions suggested that discriminatory treatment in alcohol regulations was not impermissible, and that it was only in relatively recent cases like Granholm that the court suggested otherwise. And those more recent cases, he thought, were easily distinguishable from the case before the court, the Tennessee case, and he would have, like the association, limited Granholm's holding to the producer or product tier of the three-tier system. So that's real quick synopsis of Justice Gorsuch's dissent. There is a lot I'm leaving out. It's both the majority and the dissent are really, really interesting reads. They both take a deep dive into the historical kind of lay of the land of alcohol regulation and jurisprudence, and I would commend both of them to folks who are interested in this area. Some takeaways from the majority opinion. First thing I would say, it really is just a broadside indictment of economic protectionism. The court stressed that economic protectionism, that is the desire to protect in-state interests from out-of-state competition, is never a legitimate governmental purpose under Section 2 of the 21st Amendment. Second takeaway, I think this does spell kind of the end of durational residency requirements in other states, and perhaps even simple residency requirements, those that do not have a durational component, at least at the retail level of alcohol regulation. Another takeaway is a lot of folks have asked about what this means for physical presence requirements. That is the requirement that a retailer or wholesaler or producer, for that matter, have a physical presence in a state, even if the ownership doesn't have to be necessarily a resident of that state. I think that's an issue that the lower courts are going to have to resolve. Physical presence was not at issue in this case. After all, Total Wine and Doug and Mary Ketchum were attempting to operate brick-and-mortar stores that were physically present in the state of Tennessee. So I think we'll have to wait for another day for that issue. And the last takeaway is that we now have this framework for reconciling Section 2 and the Dormant Commerce Clause. As Justice Alito called it, this predominant effects test. And lower courts now have, I think, a little bit better guidance in how they go about applying both of these seemingly at loggerheads concepts. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in future challenges. I certainly think there are going to be a lot of challenges that come about as a result of this opinion. And I'm sure it's not the last word that the Supreme Court is going to have on these issues.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.